Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another exciting episode of Thriller Podcast. Today, we're talking Bitcoin in supermarkets. We have backed pending a super launch. And then finally, in our main topic, we're discussing inside protocol, Monero. Yes, this is the podcast, the inside protocol that you wanted. Well, we're diving into it. Thriller Podcast, starting now. Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls from around the world. Today is January 18, 2019. Did you miss me? I'm pretty sure you did. No, seriously, I missed y'all too. All right, let's jump into the news. First up, we got purchase Bitcoin in supermarkets. It's not just an idea anymore. Apparently, CoinMe, the first to ever receive a license that's US-based BTC ATM operator. That's right, that makes them official. Well, they partnered up with Coinstar to offer Bitcoin purchasing throughout all Coinstar mini kiosks around America. And it just so turns out they're headed to Vons, which I've never heard of, Albertsons, which I have heard of. We have them here in Austin, and then Safeway. And what you can do now is you can actually dump your coins, like pennies, whatever, quarters, whatever you have, dump them in there, and you can be asked to receive either, you know, like before, you can either choose a gift card, cash, donate it to charity, or buy Bitcoin. That's right. It's going to be at 20,000 automated kiosks across the United States. There's one here. I believe there's one here. There's an Albertsons here, I think in North Austin or South Austin. I'm going to try to drive to it tomorrow and try to film it. I think it's going to be hilarious because when I looked at it, from what I can gather on Reddit and everywhere else, it looks like they're charging like well above the price of Bitcoin, which I think right now is at 3,600, somewhere around there. Well, they're charging like 42. Yeah, it's a spike. But I mean, if for like, it's good. I'm glad to see that it's showing up places. So that way you have regular people, you know, bringing change and they're like, oh, what's that Bitcoin? they can download that and they get a little voucher and everything. It's pretty cool. So big up to CoinMe for getting that partnership. That's pretty cool. Next up we have, that's right, a Bitcoin startup is working on a free speech alternative to Patreon. I know. So check this out. Now, we know there's been a series of bans. It all started with James Alsup, a far-right political commentator, was banned from the funding platform Patreon. And then, of course, there was in December, Milo Yiannopoulos was shut down almost 24 hours after he had set up an account to fund his magnificent 2019 comeback tour. And then there was even more Patreon bashing going around. And then we had Jordan Peterson. Of course, he's a professor of psychology and tends to rub a few feathers mainstream media. Well, he jumped off and so did David Rubin of the Rubin Report. They both announced that they're both leaving Patreon and because of the way the platform has handled these situations. So they started something called a BitPatron. Now, this is the first ever Bitcoin, but it's different because this is a direct response to Patreon and their censoring of content on their platform. This will be all funded through Bitcoin and the Lightning Network as payment methods, and they expect to offer lower fees than its competitor. BitPatron's payment processing system is built on top of BTC Pay Server, an open source payment processor for Bitcoin and Lightning. Very well done. According to the website, there is no minimum pledge amount. So no more we have to pay the minimum dollar per month at Patreon. You can actually get the total fees. So right now, like for me, for example, like they take out 10%, right? Well, with this new thing, they're going to be able to take out just 4%. And ultimately, what they want to do is they basically just want to provide Bitcoin as a currency. And since it's censorship resistant and it's free speech money, they're trying to take a lead role at building a Bitcoin-based censorship-resistant platform that gives the power back to the community where it belongs. It makes total sense to me. Like, I totally see the idea for it. I see the purest form of what it could be. No centralized control, you know, a whole decentralized algorithm. Everything's backed and on the blockchain. Of course, it's a platform for every voice, regardless of what you think of them. And then, of course, it combats this kind of movement that's going on right now, where it's kind of like you have to stay in line this way, you have to stand this way, you know. And some people are willing to do that, and then there's some people that just aren't willing to do that, right? I think if you kind of run into these different personalities at places, you can kind of see like some of them act the way they act, you know, in front of the camera, behind the mic in real life. And then there's some that don't, and they just do it for spectacle. there's a couple of people that spring to mind when I say that. But regardless, this is a big deal. It's free speech. We all know how important that is, especially in America. I mean, it's important everywhere. But I feel like these days in America, it's starting to get marginalized pretty radically. But either way, it's going to be cool. BitPatron coming up here pretty soon. I signed up. I'm going to give it a go. Like, I want to see what it's built, what they're building. I want to give it a shot, but I'm not expecting anything great, you know, because it's the first iteration. Okay, our next piece of news. Well, we have a delivery date for the Ethereum fork. It's going to happen on February 27th. I know, they're upgrading, baby. You know, no, seriously. Or actually, it's actually two simultaneous upgrades. And the first upgrade will activate the 5 EIP stipulated, while the second one will remove the bug EIP, which is the one that caused the delay. Look for that to drop February 27th. Oh, yeah. And then finally, our last piece of news is backed. So we all know they're pending a launch. Well, that doesn't lead people to stop speculating, apparently. No, seriously. So there's a lot of buzz going on, and it's reverberating through the crypto space. And apparently, this is going to be a bear market buster. This is what they're calling it. And don't get me wrong, I love me some good gossip. So they also think that Starbucks will play a pivotal role in developing practical, trusted, and regulated applications for consumers. Another thing that they're speculating on is there is a lot of public dialogue that BACT is having what is called a crypto and financial media blitz coming up. Yeah, they're going to be all over the airwaves preaching to all sorts of people on camera, and they're also going to be hitting all the newspaper outlets. It's going to be a massive undertaking. Somebody close to the source has said BACT wants to build a Loctite institutional seriousness around digital assets and the safety that they plan to provide investors. They believe they can keep hitting that message to legacy outlets, and that will send them right to the bank to pull out money and invest. You know, I love this. I love me some, you know, some speculation, a little some gossip. I do think the Starbucks thing is definitely going to play a pivotal role. I think people don't realize, you know, how just insanely big Starbucks is, right, for the average person, and getting Bitcoin in front of their face, whether it's through the app or just a freaking like we accept Bitcoin here, or learn about Bitcoin here, or, you know, some kind of like tie in there. I feel like it's just big for Bitcoin, right? Just because there's so many of these places, and the regular people, no coiners drink Starbucks. So, yeah, and I don't even drink Starbucks, but my wife does, and I probably would go there just to see how it all works. Interesting. It would be interesting. Anyways, with that, let's get into our interesting video of the day. That's right. Let's do it.
Thriller Podcast. Interesting crypto video of the day.
All right, it's time for interesting video of the day. What you say? No, seriously, it's this one's a okay one. I'm not gonna say it's great. No, you know, it's pretty funny. Actually, this is more entertaining than interesting. This is, of course, Magical Crypto Show, and they talk about how Litecoin made its way to UFC and got a little box on the mat, and Charlie talks about it. Charlie Lee, that is Satoshi Lite. Check it out.
So something interesting happened recently. Litecoin got a lot of extra attention through sponsorship.
Because Charlie became a UFC fighter.
Yeah.
That's true.
You did well, Charlie. You did quite well.
Yeah.
That's true. I visited the Octagon. It was pretty cool, actually. Yeah.
You healed up nicely.
So, yeah, the Litecoin Foundation sponsored a UFC fight. Why UFC? Why are you sponsoring like a sports event? Isn't it like a Dogecoin with its car? How relevant is it?
There's been a lot of sponsorships of like individual like athletes, but sponsoring an actual event hasn't been done that much. And it just seems like the reach is better. The point of the sponsorship was, for me, it was more about just building a brand, because everyone's heard of Bitcoin. Not many people have heard of Litecoin, so I kind of wanted to like build that brand and make it more more well known. It's helped a lot. I mean, a lot of people have reached out to us to talk about Litecoin just because they heard about the USC sponsorship. I think it's pretty cool. Plus, the fight was pretty amazing. I don't know if you guys watch.
So whose idea was it?
So we have a community manager who actually works for the parent company of UFC, and he connected us to the UFC. So it just kind of evolved from there. It was really a last minute thing. They had
got a lot of backlash for
that placement, the ad placement, and just talked to us and just kind of got together.
Oh yes, because this proves now that you're a scammer, obviously.
Got a lot of hate from Bitcoin maximalists.
That's the gist of it, yeah.
I'm not sure exactly why. Yeah. Because the Litecoin Foundation sponsored an ad for Litecoin, it makes Litecoin a scam. I think that's the idea. Or maybe it became more of a threat to Bitcoin. I don't know. Why do you guys think Bitcoin maximalists all of a sudden started hating on Litecoin a lot more after that?
Who are you asking? The Monero guy or...
there's this idea that gets bounced around and has been said to me anyone that doesn't support Bitcoin and Bitcoin only is inherently evil because you're distracting people away from Bitcoin. My counter to that is there are people who have heard of Bitcoin and, you know, they, for whatever reason, they have not been interested in dipping their toe in the water or playing around with it. And maybe they hear about Litecoin through the UFC sponsorship and they go and they play with Litecoin because, you know, maybe it's just a timing thing. And through that experience of using Litecoin or playing around with Litecoin, they encounter Bitcoin, or they encounter Bitcoin when they're more ready to do so. And I don't think that, I think it's very unusual for people to start with an altcoin and completely disregard Bitcoin. It does happen, but I think it's only when they're completely fanatical, like almost with a religious fervor about some altcoin.
Bcash?
Yeah.
Ripple.
But yeah, generally speaking, people that get introduced to an altcoin, whether it is a friend or an advertising thing or a marketing scheme or whatever, they get funneled in and they then end up at least playing around with Bitcoin or buying some Bitcoin on an exchange or whatever. So like, to a large degree, I agree that that some of them can be a distraction, but I don't agree that all of them are a distraction. And if you take a look at a community like the Litecoin community or the Monero community, they tend to be, at least in the Monero community, with which I have the most experience, there's a lot of pragmatism and people are not discouraged from using Bitcoin. You know, and there's none of this like, oh, Monero is, it happens very occasionally, but it's normally like knocked away. Monero is better than Bitcoin. You know, people are sort of introduced to Bitcoin via Monero. The community is pragmatic enough to do that. And I think that there's got to be, you know, you can't just like hammer away and expect that everyone on the planet is going to like use Bitcoin and ignore any other thing that might possibly have some purpose.
Yeah, most of the Litecoin community goes out there to push for both Bitcoin and Litecoin adoption. They try to get merchants to accept both Bitcoin and Litecoin. Not Monero though, because Monero is a scam coin.
I look, in every community there are going to be people who do say stupid stuff, but I mean, they're not a mass part of either the Monero or the Litecoin community that I've seen.
You're right there, Ricardo, you're right there. No, he's right. I just feel like everybody knows at this point that Bitcoin is king, and there's not going to be a dethroning anytime soon, especially with all this institutional space, you know, kind of shoring up Bitcoin at this point. I think it is kind of cool that Monero and these other kind of gateway cryptos kind of leech out and, suck people in to this space. It's pretty cool. And I hope it keeps doing it. It's good for the community. With that, let's jump into Coin Talk. That's right. Let's do it.
It is time. Only crypto, coins, trades, predictions ahead. It is what you spend all day wondering, isn't it? This crypto dream. Only on Coin Talk. Coin Talk. Coin Talk.
All right, it's time for Coin Talk. But before we jump into that, we got to talk about other stuff first, right? Other stuff. No. So today's our 50th Thriller Crypto podcast episode. Yeah, congratulations to us. We did it. 50 episodes for this second season. You know, and this doesn't count like the Thriller News or the Thriller Coin Talks or the Thriller Convos, but I think if you added them all up, it'd be like 75. Yeah, we really crank out the juice, man. We're really cranking out the juice, crypto juice every week to week. This week, it's been such a crazy week with work and stuff. And then on top of that, you know, I'm dealing with, you know, with my mom, of course, she's still sick. So all that's going on. And so just want to apologize if anybody's routine got screwed up this week when I released, you know, two shows back to back and then there's a space. I just want you to know that I will always try to deliver three episodes for sure every week. So if I don't get them to you at the regular times like I usually do, just know that I'm working hard and trying to do that because I really love doing the show. And this is one of the best feelings that I get throughout the whole week is when I record these. And I think the hardest part is just editing them. And then, of course, you know, doing all the social media stuff and getting them out there and all that kind of stuff. That's the hardest part. Maybe one day through a podcast can afford an assistant. That'd be cool. Maybe one day, who knows? And then also want to thank everybody, you know, for listening to the show. This week has been kind of surprising. There's been an uptick in listenership. Yeah, I don't know why. I guess people are going back listening to the old episodes. They're like, hey, this guy's actually pretty good, or at least his main topics are. They're going back and listening to him. No, seriously, I don't know what it is, but thank you to whoever's out there and listening to the show. I noticed we got some new Instagram followers, so thank you, Instagrammers, for following me. I always do live stuff on there and all this other stuff on there too, so that's cool. And then also want to thank the tweeters out there who follow us. Thank you very much for that too. You know, that's all helpful and good because it spreads the word of Thriller Crypto and kind of spreads the gospel of the whole crypto space. And then I also want to say, take a little time out to say, we're doing it big this year at South by Southwest. That's right, we're doing it extra big. I mean, seriously big. It's going to be awesome. I can't wait. Like, I'm looking through all the different blockchain stuff, and it just looks amazing. I can't, you know, I'm just telling you right now that we're going to be live streaming the fuck out of South by Southwest this year. Like, seriously, like, we're going to be live streaming. I hope a lot of crypto friends from around America that I've met throughout this past year and the year before, and just you guys who are listening, come out to South by this year and kind of just have fun. Like, I'm looking forward to it. We're going to be live streaming everything. We're going to be doing podcasts every day. I'm looking to drop like 15 podcasts. I'm not even joking. Like, one podcast every single day. It'll probably be poorly edited, but I guarantee you I'm going to get you the news every single day. I'm going to get you what's going on. I'm going to tell you what's going on in the space at that time. It's going to be big. It's coming up here. I know it doesn't feel like it because we're still in January, but February just flies. And then March is right around there. Right at March, it just starts ramping up. This whole city gets crazy. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to request off for the whole week and a half or whatever it is, just so I can just like focus primarily just on crypto for that week and getting you guys the best coverage of everything there. I think from what I saw, I think Joe Lubin's coming, which is cool. That I'm really looking forward to his keynote on Ethereum and consensus. And then I believe I saw Joel Katz. And if y'all don't know who that is, he's the lead, or he was the co-developer of XRP, but he actually is just now the CTO of Ripple. But it would be cool to see him there, because I'm not going to say I'm going to bum rush him, but I would ask him some questions regarding how he talks about his horizontal network. And you know, because we covered it in the past, and there's some things that I like to do. And yeah, I just want to ask him some basic questions. You know, it's funny, like, I feel like with me, like, I really ask straightforward, basic questions to these people, you know, on social media and stuff, and I never get an answer. And I feel like it's because either they are trying to avoid those questions, or they realize, like, okay, this guy knows what he's talking about, or they just think I'm a buffoon. Either way, they're avoiding the questions, and we got to ask them. So, anyways, I'm looking forward to South by. I hope you guys are too, because that's usually our biggest week of the year, listenership wise. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's gonna be a lot of fun. I can't wait to see a lot of old friends there. Hopefully you come out too. If you do, we will definitely hang out. We'll eat some barbecue and talk about crypto. That's what we'll do. Yeah, it'll be a lot of fun. Anyways, we also have our new website, thrillerx.com. be sure to check that out. That's where everything is. I'm gonna be doing some updates over the weekend, but everything's at thrillerx.com. And of course, if you want the most minimalist news in the entire crypto space, go to thrillercrypto.com. That's where I get all the news from. All right. With that, let's roll our disclaimer. Because if Bakkt's going to be releasing some stuff and they can go on the offensive, well, so can Thriller Crypto. We can go on the offensive and we can start shilling stuff before disclaimers. But wait. Probably not, because the government's shut down still, right? Here in the United States. At least that's what they say on TV. I haven't noticed the difference. But no, seriously, we got to play the disclaimer, though, because there's somebody always watching, man. Somebody's probably looking through this webcam right now. We don't know what's going on. Our microphones are probably bugged. This room is probably bugged. Who knows what we're in? We're probably in a simulation. I don't know. But we got to roll. Disclaimer.
Remember, Thriller Podcast does not give financial advice. He cannot tell the future, even if he thinks he can. He is just some dude trying to save the world one Satoshi at a time.
You know, I always wonder, like, when I first, okay, I'm going to tell you, like, this is totally off topic. So when I first saw PewDiePie, I don't know if you know who he is. He's a famous YouTuber. If you don't, you should watch him. I seriously thought there was something wrong with him. Like, I saw his face. Like, he was talking about stuff, and I was like, wait, there's something wrong with this guy. I wasn't sure if it was like an illness or some other kind of, thing that was going on with him. But I was like, well, this guy's not right, right? And then, I kept watching, like, episodes, and then I realized, I was like, oh, no, he's normal. He's a normal person, right? He's just really weird. And I wonder, I really do wonder if that's how I come off to the crypto community. It makes me think. You guys tell me. I really wonder that stuff because I know there's sometimes where I'm serious and there's, you know, during this bear market, there's really not a lot of seriousness around. There's just a lot of waiting around. That's all we're doing. Right now, Bitcoin is at $3,664 and that's it. That's it. It's been that way for the whole week. We're at $122 billion coin market cap. We've been going back and forth between $121, $122 billion. Every day this week, it doesn't look like anything's changing for the most part. It's very sideways. And I'm not going to lie. I think the last time I bought some crypto was on Tuesday. And I think just the entire market is just kind of in this like lull right now. This has probably been the least exciting week of the entire crypto space I have ever seen since I've been in it. Like, seriously, this is the least exciting week I've seen in a really long time in crypto. There's just nothing going on this week. Like, absolutely nothing. I think the Coinstar thing was the biggest thing happening this week. It was like, oh, you can buy Bitcoin with change now. Like, that's the biggest news that I've seen this week. It's just, yeah, there's really just not a lot happening these days. And a lot of people are blaming, you know, the United States government for shutting down, or, you know, they're blaming other, you know, forces that are, you know, influencing the space and controlling the markets, or, you know, they're blaming ICOs, you know, pumping or dumping. Regardless, it is the space we're in right now. And ultimately, I think this sideways, this is why I wasn't trying to make a prediction. I know a lot of you that are listening right now are probably either have your own channel on YouTube, or you're some kind of other, you know, influencer, or you're somebody in this crypto space that's either a developer or whoever you are that's listening right now. I will say there's a lot of you out there that have been saying, oh, well, this is going to be the year. 2019 is going to be the year, and it's going to run up and blah, 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 blah. And I want to believe you. I do. I really do want to believe you, but I want to wait. And I'm comfortable waiting. And I think the vast majority of people who are smart, and they're very, you know, smart thinkers, really smart, a smart thinker, right? They're thinking right now, hey, Carr, why do you keep saying smart thinkers? And I'm like, you know why I keep saying smart thinkers? Because ultimately, I don't think this space is going to show us anything right now. January, February, March seems to me like a really good time just to hang low, buy when you see something really go low. You know, sell when you see something really go high. For a while there, we were just going between 38 and 41, back and forth, la-di-di-da, no big deal here. All of a sudden, we go down to 36, and everybody's just like, meh, nothing. There's no trading going on. There's hardly anything happening in this space right now that's going to make this volume spike. I mean, it seems like right now people are still just getting out of their vacations. And they're waking up. I expect, don't get me wrong, I expect next week to be a lot better. I really do. I think we're going to see some kind of action, whether it's tanking down, you know, to 2,800, or it's climbing back up. But I do know that this kind of lower end, it doesn't happen very often. And when it does, it's always followed by something either going really high or going really low. We'll see what happens. I'm hoping it just keeps staying like this. I'm perfectly fine looking at my portfolio every day and seeing, the same. That's not bad, you know. Don't get me wrong. I'm kind of hoping that it goes a little down right now. I'm not going to sell anything, but I do want to buy some more Bitcoin while I still can. And I do want to buy some more Ethereum too as well. But now I'm getting so cheap with this, I don't want to pay $120 for Ethereum. And I'm going to be kicking myself a year from now for not buying $120 Ethereum. I should be buying some, but I'm not, because I want to wait for under $100 Ethereum. Seriously, that's my logic right now. That's insane. This whole crypto winter has turned me into a polar bear. Wow. Okay, we got Bitcoin Cash, $128. This makes no sense, this guy. We got EOS, $2.47. We got Stellar at 10 cents. Yet you guys still listen. And ladies, you still listen to Old Thriller Car. I don't know why. You should be going off and listening to somebody else at this point. No, I really appreciate every single one of you that listens to me blabber this whole time during Coin Talk. This is probably the least interesting Coin Talk episode or the Coin Talk segment I think I've done in a really long time. But I try to make it as entertaining as possible because there's nothing going on these charts. You got Tron at 2 cents. Right? Did they ever have their conference or what happened? I kind of been out of it for about 2 days. So when you're out of crypto for 2 days, you feel like you've been out of it for a week. But let's see here. Just had an amazing talk to share our values. Kobe Bryant and Tron. I wonder how much Tron he gave Kobe Bryant. Okay, so they had it today. Oh, that's cool. Oh, wow. I didn't realize they had it today. Probably should watch that Kobe Bryant thing. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like as of late in the space, I've been seeing a lot of, you know, Cointelegraph and, of course, CoinDesk covering Tron now. But it's very interesting, man. This space is very pay to play. This is some stuff that, you know, you don't necessarily need to know, but it is, man. It is. Like, this is like inside baseball stuff. Like, I won't talk about it too often, especially on, you know, on air, as they say, you know. But I will say it's very pay to play in this space right now. And I'm not saying Tron is paying some of these media outlets, but it feels like they are. It feels like they are because now they're getting coverage on those outlets. They weren't before, but all of a sudden they have a conference. They roll out the red carpet for these media publications and then boom, they get coverage. And let's see if they keep providing that coverage. But it's interesting how all that works, at least to me, because I come from a different kind of background entirely. Like, I come from the tech space, so I'm not used to seeing how the marketing, you know, action works, obviously, you know. But it's very interesting. Yeah, so it looks like they had their conference today. No wonder it dumped. But we expected that. It looks like it I think it got as high as three cents and seven tenths or whatever it was. Was that a week ago or 2 weeks ago? Yeah, I mean, that's to be expected. But I was hoping for four. It never got that close, but it got pretty close. And I expect it to dump. I expect Tron to dump here pretty hard here in the next penny or so to a penny or so. We got Cardano at 4 cents. So Cardano actually announced that they're going to be having their own conference. Yeah, apparently all these, you know, cryptocurrencies are going to start doing their own conferences now. Stellar's doing their own conference this year too. Yeah, I think Cardano is going to do theirs in Miami, you know, and that's going to be just strange how all that works. I don't know. We'll see if we get punched in for that. We got punched in. You know, this is another thing I shouldn't be bringing up on air, but I bring it up because I'm honest with y'all. I want y'all to know exactly what I go through in my email. Because when you're in this space, like, you see some weird emails. Well, this year we got invited for the blockchain cruise, which is the one that ships from Spain into, wait, no, ship out from Spain into, or no, and then comes back from Italy or whatever it is. Yeah, like, we could go with that if we wanted to. We got asked to go. To cover, obviously, not to speak. Because who am I kidding? What can I talk about other than blah-bitty blah blah? But I will say, honestly, I think I could wing a good hour. I mean, I wing, what, like 3-4 hours a week just doing this? I could wing a good hour. Letting y'all know. But no, seriously, so we got asked, and at the, you know, to me, that sounds all fine and good. Like, I would love to go, but the plane tickets are like, what, $2,000 or something like that? Like, it's ridiculous. Like, who has $2,000 just to blow to go to a cruise? I mean, don't get me wrong, if somebody paid me $2,000 to go to a cruise, I would go. But I'm not gonna go to a cruise and pay $2,000 for the plane tickets. It's just, it's too much. Like, who has that kind of money in this crypto winter right now, you know? And yeah, it's just a lot of money. And so, like, when I see, like, Cardano or Stellar or some of these, or Tron, like, throw these conferences, I'm like, yeah, man, it's just a lot of money that they're throwing down right now in this kind of crypto winter. They should have done it last year, you know, or they should do it next year. Because honestly, at this point, it's kind of becoming the sentiment right now. And I don't like to say this just yet, but since we're in the speculation space right now that we're talking, it kind of feels like 2019 is not going to be the year that we're going to see the next run up. I am almost certain now it's going to happen in 2020, you know, and I know a lot of people have already said that, but it feels just like that. We'll see as time goes on through the year. Of course, we have backed, you know, unleashing their media blitz, and we'll see how that plays into everything. But we'll just have to, I expect them to keep extending this release of their new or whatever they're going to be doing, their whole crypto unleashed, whatever. Yeah, I expect that to happen, like, you know, later in the year. I don't expect it to happen almost immediately. I totally can see back not launching until like August, like August, September, October. Like, seriously, I seriously can see them launching that late. I know they said like first quarter of 2019. I could totally see it like happen August, September, October, which would lead into, you know, 2020. So yeah, this is just me speculating at this point. I don't know anything other than what you know out there, but yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens. Got IOTA. Who's buying IOTA these days? 31 cents. It's up 2%. I guess people are trading it. There's not really much to trade. Ethereum Classic down $4.42. And yeah, Dogecoin is up. That's cool. Everything else is down, man. Everything else is down. Augur actually up 7% today at $15. And let's look at a 24-hour change. 10x. Yeah, 53% up. Nice. And then I think that's it. I think that's all I got. Sorry, this was a very uninformative coin talk segment. I'm sorry for that. I feel like I should be getting better as these podcasts go on, but I feel like I'm getting worse, especially for being the 50th episode. Way to go, Carr. You really did a good one today. No, seriously, we got a good one. We got a good main topic, and that's what it's all about, right? We got a main topic. We're talking Inside Protocol Monero. I want to say right off the bat, I was trying to get somebody from Monero to come on the show to talk about Monero. They had to decline, not because they weren't fans of us, but they had to decline because there's a whole privacy thing. And one thing, looking into this, I've come to realize that the InfoSec community has embraced Monero at this point. And I will also say that just researching Monero, there's a lot of things that are just over my head, especially when it comes to security and privacy. And those are just like, those are terms that aren't used when you talk about, you know, ring signatures. But I will say, though, that I'm going to do my very best to explain Inside Protocol for Monero. I have reached out to somebody, and we're going to plug his book. It's called Mastering Monero. He provided a lot of information and really nice person. And he's the one that created the book, and he's the one that I really wanted on the show. But I digress. Couldn't get him. Because ultimately, these guys are serious about privacy, and they don't want either their voice on record, their face on record, or they want to live a private life. And they choose this currency to do that. And that's cool. I respect that. Main topic, starting now.
So
Monero's story begins in 2012 with the development of the CryptoNote protocol. CryptoNote was the first privacy-focused blockchain protocol and laid the foundation for a number of future cryptocurrencies. It's no wonder that in December 2012, Nicholas Van Saberhagen published a white paper, CryptoNote 1.0. Similar to Bitcoin's notorious founder, Satoshi Nakamoto, Nicholas is also a pseudonym. And while there is plenty of speculation around his, her, or their true identity, nobody has claimed ownership of the paper to date. Now, the CryptoNote 1.0 white paper was revolutionary for a few reasons. First, it detailed a method for obscuring the identity of both the sender of the transaction and the recipient of the transaction. In addition to that, the protocol detailed a new proof-of-work mechanism called CryptoNite, which is resistant to the use of application-specific integrated circuits, ASICs. The use of these on the Bitcoin network has led to the concentration of Bitcoin mining in the hands of a few well-funded operations, which has somewhat centralized the decentralized network. By implementing CryptoNite, the CryptoNote protocol attempted to avoid concentrated mining operations and create a system that is more in line with the one CPU, one vote ideal originally proposed by Satoshi Nakamoto. What's important to note here is that while the CryptoNote white paper detailed a groundbreaking new privacy-oriented protocol, it was simply a written document. There was never a CryptoNote network or a CryptoNote coin. But this brings us to the next stage of Monero's history, Bitcoin. Bitcoin was the first cryptocurrency to actually implement the CryptoNote protocol. It went live in November 2013, but the team pushed their initial code to GitHub, and a few months later in 2014, they pushed the remainder of the code and the protocol was up and running. Unfortunately, like many things in crypto, the development of Bitcoin is shrouded in a bit of mystery and more than a few red flags. All the original CryptoNote and Bitcoin researchers were unknown entities. None of them had published any prior research or online commentary, indicating that they were all either operating under pseudonyms or had limited prior experience in the crypto space. As a result, several competing groups decided they wanted to fork or relaunch the coin. The most relevant of these groups wanted to launch a new coin called BitMonero. The group was hoping that BitMonero would fix a number of issues with the underlying Bitcoin protocol, including issues related to block rewards, block times, and emissions. Unfortunately, the group's leader, a person operating under the pseudonym Thankful for Today, was in such a hurry to launch BitMonero that he completely ignored these key issues. He forked the Bitcoin code base on April 18th, 2014, and subsequently disappeared. After Thankful for Today disappeared, the BitMonero community members decided it would be best to take over the project. Just 5 days after BitMonero's initial launch, the group forked BitMonero's codebase, dropped the bit from the name, and launched a new coin called Monero.
If you go and look at the CryptoNote white paper, you will actually see a linkable ring signature scheme that is not the linkable ring signature scheme that we use today. The scheme that we use is more efficient and has some other nice properties. It's based on a scheme that Joseph Liu came up with, which again, academic work, especially mathematics, builds off of other work. So, you know, questions of who invented this are, well, it definitely, the form that we use is a slightly modified version of a paper by Joseph Liu. The original one was more closely related to a different scheme that was in some ways less efficient and less useful to us. We can debate about the history of it in particular as much as we want to, but, you know, Monero did not invent this. The CryptoNote, you know, authors did not invent this. There's a novel application of some academic and mathematical and cryptographic work that had been done prior to that, to start out with. So we basically use a scheme like that. We actually have modified it since. in particular, because we need to integrate the Ring CT scheme, which, you know, the basic structure of the Ring signature is basically essentially the same. But there are some modifications that help us work with these encrypted amounts that, you know, aren't very important to what we're talking about today. But effectively, originally when this was used, ring signatures were basically optional. So, you know, in theory, you can have a ring of one possible signer. That is one possible note that I've plucked off of the chain, one possible one-time address, output address, whatever you want to call it, that I'm sending. In that case, there is no plausible deniability. You know, if you know that one member of the ring had to sign and there is one member of the ring, you know, it does not take a very smart bear to figure out what that signer was.
We're going to start with ring signatures. These stealth addresses are great for obscuring the recipient's identity, but they only get us part of the way there. We need to be able to obscure the sender's identity as well, which is where the ring signatures come in. Take a listen.
Because as we talked about before, people like to throw around words like private and fungible when they really don't have any formal meanings. There, we have intuitive things for what we assume private or fungible mean in terms of a digital asset, but it's kind of tough to nail them down exactly. So I like to kind of branch out Monero's privacy and anonymity guarantees into three parts. Sender ambiguity, or privacy if you want to call it that, recipient ambiguity or privacy, and kind of amount and or metadata privacy. So in general, receiver anonymity and amount anonymity, or amount metadata, you might say, are in general very, very good. So what happens is when you choose to send funds to someone with Monero, and they're not directly linked to your wallet address. I mean, I have one or more Monero wallets for which there are addresses. You know, I can receive funds addressed to those, and I can use funds addressed to those to later send to other people. So Justin has a wallet address, he gives it to me, and then I, you know, somehow send funds to that using my Monero client. But what happens is the wallet address itself, that if I'm sending funds to Justin, never actually appears in the blockchain. You know, that's huge. Instead, what happens is I effectively generate kind of a one-time, we call it an output or note address sometimes, depending on who you ask. And that one-time address is what actually appears on the blockchain. So wallet addresses never appear there. That's an important fact to keep in mind. There's a difference between those, and it's kind of a subtle difference that's easy to miss from time to time. But the idea is when you're sending funds to someone, the recipient, their wallet address is never known. I basically kind of bake that recipient address into the one-time address in a way that's not reversible. So someone looking at an output that I generate that's destined to Justin, no one can tell that it's destined to Justin. Justin's knowledge of the private key that corresponds to his wallet address allows him to later spend those funds, but he can't directly determine anything about that address. You know, things like the amount of the transaction, those used to be known in Monero for various reasons, but now those are basically kind of tied up in what's called a cryptographic commitment, and that's what led into the whole idea of like range proofs and bullet proofs. That was a big point of discussion before, but that's also very, very good. So the amount of your transaction is private, the recipient of your transaction is private, but we often like to talk about sender ambiguity, and that's where ring signatures come into play. So effectively, if I'm sending funds to Justin, I would have to take some funds that I had previously received in a so-called one-time output that was destined to me, and I don't want to just necessarily send those to him. You know, in another alternate version of Monero, perhaps, maybe you could do that. You know, where I take that output one-time address and I basically sign it over to Justin in some sense. Effectively, what I'm really doing is I'm generating a new output one-time address and I'm basically signing for it using the one that I had received. And when done properly, this can assure everyone that, you know, the money existed before and that I controlled it and that nothing, you know, funny happened. But effectively, in Monero, we want to obfuscate that even more using plausible deniability. So what I do is I basically take that one-time output address, you might want to say, that was destined to me, that I wish to actually spend to Justin. But I'm also going to take a bunch of other random, and random can mean many things to different people, but I effectively take other one-time addresses that I don't control. Now, unlike things like CoinJoin or other mixers, I don't need to actually collaborate or cooperate with anyone to do this. They have no knowledge of what I'm doing, and that's an important part of this. I basically take other random one-time addresses, and I use those to form a structure called a ring sometimes. And what I do is the ring signature is basically a way to say that I know the private key that corresponds to one of these output public keys in my ring. And what this really means is that I use the private wallet address that I hold, because of course those funds were originally addressed to my, you know, wallet address. I basically use that private key in order to generate the private key for one of these outputs. So again, that's that separation between wallet addresses and output addresses, which can be confusing from time to time. And effectively, a ring signature just says that I controlled one of those, and also that certain things involving the amounts end up balancing properly. So what happens is, an outside person, you know, whether or not Justin is the one, you know, making this verification of the ring signature, or anyone who's, you know, synchronizing the blockchain and ensuring that it all was done correctly, they of course need to know that all these signatures are valid and that I actually control the funds and that I'm actually signing them over to Justin. So in that case, they can basically perform a verification of the ring signature. And all that verification tells that person is a couple of things. It tells them in particular, first, that one of those output one-time addresses, was the one that I controlled. Importantly, though, without revealing which one it is. So it says that one of them was, in this case, the true sender. So true sender in that case does not mean a wallet address. It means an output one-time address that was generated on the fly when funds were originally sent to me. And it also shows in particular that those funds weren't double spent. So kind of the cleverness of our ring signatures, they have a property called linkability. That means that if I were to grab another random ring and try to re-spend those funds, because remember, that particular one-time address, that output public key, that might appear in a bunch of other rings. Ideally, it will appear in a bunch of other rings when other people randomly grab it alongside their own. But I also need to make sure that that one wasn't spent twice. So the linkability property, which involves things like key images, lets us make sure that not only did I control one of those outputs, the one that I controlled was also not spent in another ring. So it's a lot of info kind of packed all into one structure called a ring signature. And as we're going to talk about, there are limitations to that, but mathematically, it does exactly what it says it's going to do. So effectively, I have plausible deniability. I could say to someone who says, well, you know, one of those output public keys in that was belonged to you. You could say, well, you don't know which one it was. And in particular, that output public key that I do control probably appears in a bunch of other rings, and I had nothing to do with those transactions. So it gives you some deniability about what was actually spent. That is, what public key I'm actually signing over to you, effectively.
The Monero protocol provides users with privacy through the implementation of three core cryptographic techniques: stealth addresses, ring signatures, ring confidential transactions. Ultimately, these techniques obscure the transactions, sender, recipient, and amount. Monero is more decentralized than any other privacy protocols on several different fronts. First, Monero does not rely on trusted parties like coin mixing services or trusted nodes. It incorporates privacy techniques directly into its protocol. Second, there is no central entity making decisions on behalf of the network. While the core team is responsible for maintaining the code base and guiding the protocol in the right direction, it does not have a final say over decision making. And third, Monero's CryptoKnight consensus mechanism has enabled it to remain resistant to concentrated mining operations. And finally, it's because of the Monero community and what they believe in regards to privacy and how important it is in this day and age, and why every person out there deserves the right to have privacy.
And a final note on this is that ideology is as important as the technology behind it. Firstly, Monero contributors know that at the very least, the code that we write is going to be responsible for people's money. We're also aware that the code that we write is probably going to be responsible for someone's life savings, because it doesn't matter how much you preach pragmatism and say people don't buy Monero unless you have a use for it, people are going to go and like put their house up on the market or do something stupid and invest it all and hope that it goes up. But we're also aware that our code might be responsible for a situation where if the privacy aspect of it fails, someone can go to prison. And that's kind of daunting. And the fourth thing is we're aware that the privacy-enhancing technology in Monero might mean the difference between someone's life or death. And that's really frightening. I think it's something that, as contributors to a privacy-enhancing project, we always keep ever-present in our mind. And so ideology is as important as the technology. If you have people who are building a privacy coin, but they're doing so because it's an ecosystem and they're going to, you know, make things simple for people and whatever, those are laudable goals. But if that's not their chief ideology, if that's not their chief aim, if their chief aim rather is that and not to protect users and not to defend privacy, then they're going to end up with privacy technology taking, well, a second class to, you know, usability and silly functionality that's largely unnecessary. So ideology is key.
And that's Inside Protocol, Monero. Really hope you guys enjoyed it. Had a lot of fun creating it and researching it. And with that, let's get on to the end of the show.
So take your hands in mine. Time after time, it's true.
ladies and gentlemen, another Inside Protocol is Dunsies. Yeah, I had a lot of fun creating that one. That was so good. I feel like it's my best Inside Protocol just yet. I don't know. One of these days, we need to get all these Inside Protocols together and make them into like an audiobook or something. Yeah, a lot of good information. I like it. I like learning stuff. And I hope you guys enjoy listening. All right. So I want every single one of y'all to have a great weekend. And remember, this is critical. Buy Bitcoin. Save the world. See you next week.
This is the end of-